Welcome, everybody.
Fabulous. Hi, everyone. This is Nicole Forsyth, your friendly Kirkwood librarian. Pleased to be here.
And I'm Jed Peterson. I'm not lovely or nice, but I'm very happy to be here today talking about blended education. And I teach history here at Kirkwood and love it.
And everybody knows me, I think, who's in attendance here, but in case anybody comes in who doesn't know me or is listening to this later, this is Alan Turk, and I'm instructional designer here at Kirkwood for distance learning.
And Nicole brought us smoothies, blended smoothies.
Thanks, Nicole.
So very nice, so thank you, Nicole.
You know, I think a good introduction to Jed is you speak Portuguese.
Yes.
And you were just sharing with us your favorite word in Portuguese.
It is, actually. And I don't know if you're supposed to have favorite words in other languages.
Oh, I have favorite words in Chinese. Yeah.
But just to say it, it's the word blender, because we're talking about blended courses, and blender is, it's you're liquefying things in a blender. And so it's liquificador, which is just, I don't know, it's just, you could say that all day and never get tired of it, I think. So that's what we're working with today is liquificadorando.
Welcome, everybody. Who's joining us for the live cast. We do these live at least once a month, and if you want to access the recordings, we'll be sharing that kind of link with you later on. We are coming to you live from our fabulous studio here in Lynn Hall. You may hear phones in the background. That's our soundproofing at its best.
It's part of the telethon, isn't it?
Yeah, please call in donate to the cause.
We'll get to that. I have a feeling this is the last time you're going to invite me back to be a part of this. So.
First,
it's all right.
We do have other sessions scheduled for the upcoming months, so feel free to sign up for those if you find this entertaining, useful, or otherwise a diversion to things that would be more interesting to you. But yeah.
And Alan, I would just mention some of our upcoming topics in the next 3 months. We're going to be talking about instructor presence, motivation, all the levels that might interact with students, what makes them motivated, how to motivate students in distance learning and online, and then issues around being a new instructor and being new to online instructing. So if presence, motivation, or teacher training interest you, we hope you'll sign up for our future sessions.
Yeah, we have some great guests for those as well, guest instructors coming, guest hosts. So feel free to sign up and listen and join in. So that's what this is all about. It's about joining in and talking about what's interesting in terms of blended education or any of our other topics that interest us. So
our goal is to have a blog up, and Alan and I have been really working on what a good name for our blog would be. So after today's session, we'll email you once we have a live blog. And give you the exact URL, but we think the theme for our show is going to be education is, and then using that as a theme to explore. So today we're going to talk about how education is currently being blended here at Kirkwood and sort of in the greater world, and head out for there.
So great.
Look forward to that education is blog where we'll aggregate all these things we will be sharing with you today.
And other areas that you can check out already are, you see up in the web links area, we have a Google moderator site kind of established for this cause. And a Google moderator, if you're not familiar, is kind of an idea generation platform for voting and commenting. You can kind of post questions there, and that's the way that I did it. I just posted questions. I posted a number of questions there for us to just kind of think about and preparation of this webcast, and hopefully it works for people. Yeah? Okay, I'm getting some nods.
Yep, okay. Looks good.
Okay. And in addition to that, Nicole tagged a bunch of, you did some
Absolutely.
Tagging?
Yeah, in preparation for our session today, I did some research, both of the scholarly and then sort of more popular nature. One thing hopefully we'll get to talk about today is I was a distance student for my graduate degree in library and information science, and found Delicious is just such a great way to aggregate many of the web-based resources I was finding as a student. So you can see some of the things that I read in preparation for today there, interesting links. And in the future, hopefully we'll have a consistent tag if anyone else is a social bookmarker of any sort, maybe we can kind of consistently use the same tags. But
I guess the first thing is to talk about is probably how we go about defining blended instruction, blended courses here at Kirkwood. What are we doing right now at Kirkwood in terms of blended instruction? And I think a lot of us already are aware of this, but I'm going to ask Jed what he's doing in terms of blended. What do you think is going on in blended instruction?
Well, for me, I think I just feel like I'm on a radio show or something.
You're on a radio.
You are.
This is really cool. I don't know. Anyway, I think for me, this is a subject that is still relatively new. I mean, people have been doing this for many years, but on the other hand, we're still figuring out how to do it. I think if you go into a regular classroom with the regular students, I don't know if there's such a thing as a regular classroom with regular students, but, you know, there's kind of some really good best practices out there. You can kind of really, this is how you do this. I think with blended courses, we're still trying to figure out how to do that. For example, generally for me, when I started doing a blended course, for me, a definition of blended is you do some in class and then you give some assignments and things out of class. Mm-hmm. So for example, I'm teaching a 3-hour class where we meet 2 hours and then that third hour is a discussion board or a quiz or a test or some activity that you might normally take time up with in class. And then what I've done is kind of more two hours of lecturing. What I'm realizing now is that I'm not as exciting as I thought I was. And those of you that are listening to me right now might be going, oh my gosh, it's so true. We thought he was more exciting also. And so they call it like an upside down blended course. And so what I'm going to be doing over the summer, my goal is to try to record, do some podcasts of some of the material and do that for the blended. So do the discussion instead of doing a go on your own and do a discussion post. Let's do a 45-minute long discussion together where I give you the topic ahead of time and then we come in and we work through it in class instead of that outside class, and then give them content videos to watch on their own outside of class. Because really the lecture part is, I mean, I'm now teaching using Adobe for part of that. And so we're able to have some really good discussions in the chat room. And I'm able to do polls. I'm able to do small group discussions that are really useful. But when I start just lecturing, it's still lecturing.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to give them that content. You need to give them that content. There has to be some of that, especially in a history class. There has to be some reaffirmation and kind of connecting things and looking at how it all fits together. But it's still lecturing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that makes me think about, you know, just the larger movement in education, thinking about how do we deliver content that students can watch and absorb on their own, and then using that class time, using interactive synchronous time for group work. You know, Khan Academy is doing that. I was just looking at the library's blog. We interviewed DJ Henninger in Anatomy and Physiology, an instructor here at Kirkwood. And he's making a lot of podcasts and having his students watch them on their own time and then using class time for discussion and answering questions.
Because that's what happened when the blended idea was first presented to us, was you can take those kind of activities that you as a teacher aren't really in that much control over anyway and remove those from the class. And so and I think that is useful, and the students are very appreciative of that, and it works well. But I think that's where this is still very fluid, in my opinion, kind of opportunity. And it's good for you as a teacher to sit back, and I think that's where it becomes important as an instructor to go, okay, what are the parts that I really want to be involved with? Mm-hmm. And what are the parts that the students really don't need me as much and can go off on their own? And because it's kind of like being a parent. The job of being a parent is to eventually make yourself useless. I mean, you want them to go off on their own as become an adult and be able to do these things by themselves and make their own decisions. I mean, your job as a parent is to make yourself eventually non-important. And I think that's the same thing as a teacher, is your job is to let them learn the skills and the content so then they can go off on their own after you're done with class and be successful with this knowledge and this information. So I think with a blended course, you're kind of able to do that a little bit. You're able to kind of say, here's some stuff for you to do on your own. Let's see you learn how to walk a little bit without me holding your hand mm-hmm. and do this. And so it's important to figure out what parts of the class that works out best for. That's probably the worst analogy ever in the history of the world. But hopefully you understand what I was trying to say.
It really speaks to lifelong learning. I mean, I think ideally that's what many instructors want, is their students to be able to investigate, learn on their own.
I mean, as a history teacher, I get most of these students for 16 weeks out of their life, and I have to give them something that 20 years from now is still going to be of value to them. And so I think doing this kind of a format allows you to do some things that makes that more meaningful for them, I hope.
So what kind of feedback have you gotten so far from in terms of the meaningfulness of this approach?
Well, to be honest, that's one of the reasons why I'm still tweaking it, mm-hmm. Is because the feedback has been mostly good. Students really like the opportunity to have some of this on their own, to step back and become their own learners. I have had some students who have said, and everybody learns differently, so a lot of times I'll get some older students who really prefer the lecture format mm-hmm. and really wish that we met for 3 hours so that they could hear me speak more about some of this stuff. And that's nice, and I appreciate that. And I've actually have met a couple times with students outside of class that wanted more to kind of converse with them about some stuff kind of more individually. But for the most part, I've got students who are very excited about it. Now, this semester, I'm teaching both of my KTS classes using Adobe mm-hmm. instead of the KTS. And I've got a lot of students at home. This is a great format. I absolutely love it. It does have its limitations as well, I'm learning. One of the things that I don't like about it, and I think you're noticing this, Bonnie and Carol and Jennifer and Jude and Kay, and Pam and Prof and Tim and Todd. I mean, Todd's here in the room with us, so he's stuck with us. But there is kind of a disconnect as far as we're here together, we're all chatting about this, we're talking about this, but you don't really get to know each other as well in this kind of a format. So I'm actually contemplating maybe trying to do 1 hour a week on the KTS where you get to visually see each other and hear each other's voice, 1 hour on Adobe, 1 hour on your own. That'd be kind of wacky blended. But the thing is to try to get all those pieces, as many of those pieces that you would get in a regular classroom, mm-hmm. and spill that out so you're touching the students in as many ways as possible and that they are able to get what they want out of the class. So I don't know, it's something to think about. But I think that's the key thing with something like this, is you're already kind of outside of the box a little bit. So you might as well do whatever you can with it so it really does what you want it to do.
And so far the blend for you has been primarily a combination of computer interface and then also real-time,
right?
Either computer interface or now maybe in the future even real face
right.
time where yeah. you spend with the students.
Something.
And
right.
blending all that together means the blended environment for you.
Yeah, and so, you know, and that's the thing, is I think a lot of times, I'm going to use Nicole here as an example of this, we kind of think blended means 50-50 or 66-33 or whatever. But she brought me a smoothie today that was strawberry, banana, and peach. You know, it's three flavors. And so kind of I'm just thinking, it was very good, by the way. We'll pretend that she made it.
Yes, it's delicious. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, is that in my opinion, therefore, if you're going to make that step into a blended kind of course, mm-hmm. then it makes sense, to really pull it apart and look at it and say, let's look at each component and which components are best in which format, and we're going to do that in that manner. And so you could do blended, really. Once you open that box, the sky's the limit. As long as your aim is to get the content and the skills that you need those students to learn to the students in the best possible method, then I think, I don't know, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this. Todd's over there beating his head against the wall listening to me. But I think you do whatever it takes to get that where your students need to get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that go off topic? I should have read my script better.
The thing that I'm sort of hearing is, you know, that there's many different ways to blend it. You know, we can do strawberry, banana, and peach. But maybe there's other elements to get thrown in. Some of the reading I was doing mentioned mobile learning and just how increasingly important that's going to become. In the library, we've got a new ebook collection that, you know, we're trying to figure out, okay, how is this best accessed mobile? Do students want to access things in a
right.
mobile format? What other mobile learning kind of is happening? So that's another, you know, mm-hmm. thing we could add into the mix or think about. When I as a distance student myself, we did, you know, our blend was synchronous and asynchronous through Illuminate, which was a Adobe Connect type element, but we also had an in-person requirement there at the library school at Illinois where, you know, I started off my graduate career with a two-week boot camp intensive, got to know and get really chummy and tight with colleagues in a 75-person cohort, and then every semester, for every class that I took, I had a day of in-person meeting, and so every class you'd have to meet for a day, and they did it over like a short span of time so you could travel to Champaign-Urbana and meet with your people. And that was just an interesting different level. And obviously that's, you know, at the graduate level, it's really important to get to know your colleagues. But yeah, the thing I've been struck with is there's so many different things to blend, ways to blend it, technology in person.
Well, and a lot of people don't understand that they're already doing blended courses. You know, I mean, you still might be meeting for 3 hours, but you might be having them do online assignments. You might be having them go watch YouTube clips outside of class. And, you know, so there's still, you're still getting students material and content in a different way than just sitting in a room and me giving it to you. And I think that's where the blended comes in.
I think that's where it starts anyway.
It starts, right.
Kind of creeps in.
And well, it's kind of like one of those things where people say, oh, I don't use technology in the classroom, but you know, technically a chalkboard is technology. It's just really old technology.
Right.
You know, we all do this. It's just a degree that we focus in on this and say, okay, is this delivery method pushing me where I need to be? And so I think once you get into blended education, that's to me, that's the question. When you say education is, and then there's that blank, when you talk about blended, then you really do have that big blank there and say, okay, what am I trying to do here? How can I do it the best way possible?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things to blend. The I think one aspect that we haven't talked about yet that was a big part of a book that I recently got that I have a link to here on Amazon, the How to Design and Teach a Hybrid Course, his big push for blended instruction is really about the nature of the type of assignments that are coming into the classroom and making those assignments more part of the student's real world, more meaningful. And that's kind of timely for us as a department because as distance learning department knows, we're kind of in the midst of our SMART goal for the year is to make sure students understand the relevancy of assignments in their in their courses. So as I was reading that, it was I was struck by the idea that, okay, yeah, well, blended is computers, it is face-to-face time, but then it's also blending a lot of other things, blending even with library resources, bringing that into your class. Might be a different kind of blend for you if you haven't ever done that before.
So we're basically making people more confused through this discussion.
Exactly.
I'm sure there are people who said, tell me what a blended course is, and we're going away from that. But that's the fun thing to me about this.
Strawberry peaches.
It's no bananas. It's all strawberry peach. But it's that's, I love that you just said that because that's so true. That when you do this, it does open up opportunities for you to give different kinds of assignments than you might normally have done. I've started doing, I call it a hidden history project, where I give them time outside of class and they get to pick a topic that they care about that isn't a popular, you know, they don't get to do a biography of Abraham Lincoln, But for example, I had somebody do one on the use of horses in the Civil War. They loved horses, and they've always loved horses. So they were able to do something that they cared about, and they made it more relevant to them. I have nurses in the program who they'll take my class and they'll do the history of nursing in ancient Greece or something like that, and it makes it relevant to their life. So that to me is something that is also very important. That you can get at, and you can get at that with a regular course as well, but kind of giving them that flexibility in their own schedule and their own time to work on this, and then still make yourself available to them. I still try to be, you're giving them that hour to work on stuff, but that means that I've also got that hour. But that, you can't expect as a teacher to say, we're only meeting for 2 hours, but you've still got to do all this extra stuff during, for that hour. But I don't. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work that way. You've got to spend that time yourself. And a lot of times it's a lot more work to set something up for that hour, for that week.
Do you find the assignments tend to be more diversified in this kind of...
Yeah, yeah. And you feel a little more comfortable giving them something a little trickier.
Yeah.
You feel like I can give them... So, like, for example, there, we've got a discussion post coming up in my... U.S. history class, where they're talking about, what are we doing this week? I think it's talking about unions. And I'm able to craft it a little bit more now. I was able to bring in the Occupy Wall Street movement and now connect the message that both, the rise of unions in the late 1800s is kind of a class warfare-ish mentality, we're being oppressed by the wealthy, bring that in here with the Occupy Wall Street, and you're able to give them something that causes them to think a little bit more and connect dots that you might, if you're meeting for that third hour, you might have a difficulty pulling that off, and you might have difficulty getting what you wanted out of it, getting them to make those connections. So by... as a teacher, you just feel more comfortable if they say, oh, that's a lot of work. You can go, but we're not meeting on Friday. You've got, you don't have to drive into campus. You don't have to put on pants. You can just stay home and focus on this. And so it makes me feel happier giving them some more dense and robust, I hate that word anyway, I used it, assignments, relevant and all that. Because they've got that time.
So you bring up a good point about the students kind of questioning this format. Do you find students are doing a lot of questioning of the format? And other listeners can certainly join in on the chat room to let us know if there are special things.
Yeah, no one's chatting.
No? This is a quiet group?
This is really boring. No one wants to listen to me the whole time.
Yeah, they're enjoying the conversation.
The banter.
No, are there special things that you feel that you have to do as an instructor now that you are including more of a hybridized style of instruction? Does a student need to know that the class is going to be a hybrid style class before it gets going, before they sign up for it?
Right. We do a pretty good job of explaining that in the schedule. When they sign up for a specific class that's a hybrid class, it'll say on this course schedule. You always get some students who don't read that. They just see, it only meets 2 hours Thursday. Done and done. I get students who sign up for this knowing that it's only 2 hours a week who have said to me, oh, I really wish we had that extra time. For example, I'm teaching a Thursday morning class on Adobe Meets from 9 to 11, so it's 2 hours, so we don't meet on Tuesday. I get a lot of students, stay-at-home moms, this stuff, it really fits their schedule well, So kind of that's the neat thing about this is not only is it opening up a different kind of education that you feel is a more real education, but it's also schedule-wise good for these students. Mm-hmm. You do get those students who show up and go, why are we, and then you definitely get those students who say,
do they want
this is a lot of work,
Yeah.
And you go, well, we don't meet one day a week. Usually they go, oh, Now, with any class, and I think I'm the only one here on campus who has this problem, but sometimes I have students who don't finish the class.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's poor reflection on me, I know. But, you know, so I'm always a little nervous. You know, you email students who aren't coming anymore and you say, why are you not coming? Is the format part of this? Mm. And usually they don't respond because the reason they left is because they don't, you know, for some reason they don't want to be invested in the class. So I'm really not sure if I'm losing students per se because of the format of the course. I would hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are some students who, I mean, there are those students who, I mean, if you teach an online class, you know there are those students who, if you don't, this is due Thursday, sure. this is due Friday, if you're not holding their hand, giving them a schedule, work, if they're not constantly daily engaged in the material, it just goes away. Mm-hmm. And so this might, you know, you're only meeting once a week or twice a week, there might be some students who this is difficult for. Mm-hmm. That was a really long answer to get to that, sorry.
Well, and I did have some students. Well, most of my reactions in a class that I taught for the accelerated program, it was just a reduced, we would cut the last hour. So normally those classes meet for 4 hours a night, but we met for just 3 hours, and then the last hour was kind of online activities that they had to do. And nobody complained about that, of course. I mean, these are all working, right. Working Iowans, and so they were thrilled to have that last hour, especially since it's nighttime and you could leave at 9:30 instead, or 8:30 instead of 9:30 at night. Yeah. So it really kind of worked into their schedule really well, and the coursework kind of fit in anyway, being a technology and culture course. So it kind of made sense. But for other courses, I've heard some instructors say that, well, even trying to introduce a discussion forum in a face-to-face class is met with resistance from time to time because they don't feel like this is an online class. I shouldn't have to do that. This isn't a hybrid class. I didn't sign up for that thing, that kind of thing. Why am I being forced into this?
Right. And right. Well, and I'm on a tactic for our learning initiatives, and we're trying to work on how distance learning students can get put into the right format for them. What kind of information do we need for that? And I think that's really a key thing, is to make sure that the students who sign up for these kind of classes know what they're getting into, realize that this is what's happening, and are set up for success in a class like this. Because as Jen has said, and Jude, and I didn't read Prof's thing yet, I think it depends what you ask the students to do. I guess what I'm saying is you want to make sure, and I feel bad about this sometimes. We're the distance learning program. So we have farmers who haven't been in class for 30 years in our class. And sometimes you want to be that cutting edge. Like, oh, this is a really cool idea to teach a class with. Let's do this. And I've pulled back. There's definitely things that I would like to do also, but you don't want to jump so far that you lose some of these non-traditional students, some of these people who don't have very good computer skills. You know, I've got students at the Resource Center who need a lot of help when it comes to the computers, and really all the county centers. There's always some, and you feel kind of bad saying, okay, now get on and watch this podcast and
absolutely.
Respond, do this online quiz, and you need to go find these online resources at the website, the library site, and they're going, how do I turn it on again? You know, so there has to be that kind of a balance also.
As a librarian, and we, you know, we see just such a diverse array of users in the library, really sophisticated to a lot of those folks who we're supporting, and it actually makes, I have two questions for you, Jed. One's about context, sort of how at the beginning of a course do you introduce students to what they're kind of being expected to do? And the reason I'm curious about that is, you know, in my education, I had a 2-week in-person, you know, we had a kind of well-resourced array of tech support people to help us navigate. So I'm curious how you set that context. And then also, you know, I think the support question for online students, I mean, this is something we grapple with in the library all the time. How do we, all the support services that we have here at Kirkwood for students, but at really any educational institution, how do you make that felt to students who are online. I mean, regardless of your blend, whether you're all online, asynchronous. So yeah, just curious how you set the context for your students, and then any thoughts on how you bring learner support in to the class? I know we're all grappling with it, but...
Yeah, I... can always
no context.
You can always,
context free.
You can always answer a question with a story, right?
Excuse me. Absolutely.
When I was hired here, I think 39 years ago, I knew next to nothing about technology.
Okay.
I had taught an ICN class before a couple times through high school. It was a college course, but taught to high school kids over the ICN. Had never taught an online class, and I showed up, and they said, they didn't even offer online history classes at that point. They said, we'd like you to start teaching online history classes. And they said it to me after I got hired. I was like, oh, sure, I can do that. But the reason, and I'll never forget this, when I got hired, Michelle Payne called me up to tell me I'd been hired, and she said, we were just really excited about your enthusiasm, you know. And I always thought that was funny. They didn't say, we really felt you were qualified, or you impressed us with your intellect. It was like, wow, you really got those pom-poms going well, buddy. So it was good. But I think I look back on that, and I think, you know, really when you're teaching a blended format, when you've got time where you're not with them, you need them to know that you still are available. They need to know that you're excited about them. They need to know that you're on their side, that you're rooting for them, that you're there to help. So when I set the context of my course the very first day, I am a cheerleader. I'm in the classroom saying, we can do this. You know, it's none of that. I always hate it. And I had classes like that where the professor would stand up the first day and say, look, both sides of you, one of you will not be here at the end of the class. You know, and it might be you that's looking both directions, you know, and I don't want that. I always tell my students that my goal in life is to give an entire class A's. It's never happened, but, you know, that would make me so happy if everybody worked hard and everybody did that. So for me, the context is for them to know that even if I'm not there, I'm still there. I'm still available to them. And I think that's the key thing for me, is for them to know that there is a person out there, that this isn't just some random, I'm taking these quizzes and doing these things, but it's just going off into space, and then space returns it to me, and then I get a B at the end of the semester.
So it's a very humanistic kind of context you're setting, not a very, here's the tech that you're going to use, this is the steps to access the course.
You know, we go through that, but at every step, I'm just reiterating, you know, here's how you email me, but please do, because I want to hear from you. Here's how you access the course, and do this today. Here's your introduction post that I want you to do, and I'm going to read this, and I'm going to enjoy learning about you, so please do this, you know? So they know that it's not just some silly thing, that there's a reason behind it, and that there's a person behind it who's invested in them. I think that if in an online or a blended situation, it's very easy for the students to say, I don't need to do this because nobody cares if I do this or not. But if they know that there's a professor who's waiting to get their assignments, and of course, I'm sure none of them are like, submit and go, phew, thank goodness, now Jed can finally go to sleep because he's been waiting up all night for me to turn my assignment. But still, knowing that there is somebody available for them if they have problems, and that there's somebody who's rooting for them, who wants them to be successful. And that's, you know, I mean, I didn't get a lot of that when I was in college, and it would have been helpful, I think. And obviously it's not, but don't worry about the work. I mean, you still hold them to a high standard. You still have those in-depth assignments, and you look at the Bloom's taxonomy, and you try to move your assignments up as high as you can get them for that thinking process to work. But on the same hand, I mean, I had a student today during the middle of class was like, is this going to be on the test? And I just stopped and said, well, who cares? You know, we're creating an understanding of this movement that's happening in America at this time, and it's important to understand all of it so you get the context of it. And that, to me, is you know, and again, it would have been very easy to make a little belittling comment about, oh, what the heck, you moron, right? But making that into a teaching moment where you say, no, look, this is what we're doing here. This is the big picture that we're working on. And so bringing students that big picture and letting them know that you're there with them. So that's the context. So for me, the technology, they figure that out. They get that. By the second week, they know how to log on. They know how to get to the class. They know how to take the quizzes. I have them take 8 quizzes. I only count 6 of them towards their final grade and let them know day one, just hop into that first quiz. If it doesn't work out, it's not going to kill you. You know, give them those supports, and then you slowly peel them away as the semester goes. But they know that you're there with them. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but a lot of times with the blended course, we think we have to focus so much on the technology that we turn ourselves almost into that robot avatar that's just on the screen that's not a real person to them. Mm-hmm. That's probably the wrong answer, but that's all right.
No,
That's how I am. What was the second question? I totally forgot.
About, you know, learning support. I mean, you know, and I think about kind of the, I don't know, if traditional and historical, you know, college, you go to college and you have sort of people around you to support you. You know, here at Kirkwood, we've got counselors, we've got advisors, we've got librarians, we've got tutors.
I've actually I don't know how I became like the Adobe guy somehow, but which I'm fine. I mean, I think it's a great platform.
You started it, yeah.
I know it's my own fault. I basically made myself the Adobe guy, but it's okay. But I've met with student services. I've met with different groups to kind of run through what this can do for you. I just got an email the other week from over in continuing education. They'd like to use this for some of their programs, so I'm going to go in and do a demonstration for them. I think it's fantastic. I mean, it's great that we're all able to meet together. One thing that I love is on Angel, you can put on your courses student resources. There's a little...
little nugget.
Nugget.
Yeah.
I always forget. In Angel, it's a pod... Sorry, in Adobe it's a pod, in Angel it's a nugget. And you get this little nugget, and it's got links to financial aid and to you know, student services and those kind of things. It is harder with online students. To me, again, I mean, I'll get emails from students saying, and I do, I'll get students who email me saying, I'm having a problem with my roommate. Like, they'll actually contact me because they don't know where else to go.
Right.
And in an online format, it's more difficult for them to feel connected.
Right.
And so if at least they're connected to me and they know that there is a person that cares about them, then they've got that resource. One of the best things that I got to do here at Kirkwood a couple years ago is I was able to teach Kirkwood 101. And I would recommend every instructor teaching that class at one point if you get a chance, because I learned more about Kirkwood than my students did by far. But you learn as an instructor where these services are, and who does what, and who is, and some, let's just be honest, there are some people who are better equipped for whatever reason to deal with online students than other people. And so you kind of learn, oh, if you have problems with financial aid, call this person because they're going to be not more helpful, but they're going to be more knowledgeable of the online situation. They're going to be able to take care of you a little bit better. You know, not a negative thing at all, but kind of you got to learn who are the people that are a little more focused on this kind of learning and are more willing to help these kind of students. So, you know, I've tried, and I don't know how successful I've been, but I've tried to incorporate some of the big topics from College 101 into my class. So I have them do reflective pieces where I write to me about how the semester's going. I don't even want to know what you're learning in my class. How are things going? Are you doing well? You know, and then all of a sudden you get a red flag that pops up with that. You go, oh my gosh, this person is really struggling, and that gives you a way to go in and help them out a little bit more. So, you know, you can email them back and say, hey, you know, there's student services can help with this kind of stuff if you really need some help. So it takes time, and I know that we only get so much time.
Yeah.
we're almost out of time.
Speaking of time.
Yeah. but to me, it's important for the, it's so important for me. My philosophy in life has always been nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And so for me and my students, I try for them to know that I care. And then that makes me a real human being to them. And then I think that connects them more to the class than any other bit of technology you could possibly do, which is why we don't have online classes run by computers. I mean, it'd be very easy for the college to fire me and just set up a class and say, do, you know, have me, you know, here, Jed, why don't you do all these podcasts? And then I do them and then they fire me. Mm. Or you could just buy, you know, I'm sure there's a video series online of some guy from UCLA that's retired that wants to do this and do a whole bunch of true, false questions and multiple choice questions at the end of the semester. Here's, you're competent, right? A kind of a competency-based thing. You passed this test, you got this cut score, you're good. But we still have teachers for a reason. And in a blended course and in an online course, I think the teacher is even more valuable and more useful. And the trick, therefore, is to get yourself as, and this is, I'm wrapping up right now, I promise.
Thank you.
The trick, therefore, my last thing is to get you as a teacher into the class where you're of the most benefit to them, and then step back when it's of the most best benefit to the students for them to be on their own. Period. I'm done.
Thanks, Jed, for indulging my obvious question that really intersects with the life that I lead. Before we kind of wrap things up here tonight, I did want to mention some of these web links and some of the research that Alan and I dug up. The evaluation of evidence-based practices link that you see there is a report that came through the Department of Education. There's actually an hour-long podcast by some of the study authors. And it was just a really important kernel of information for me that I wanted to be sure and share before we left. And I'm just going to read directly here from page 15 of the report, which you have a link to. It says, instruction combining online and face-to-face elements has a larger advantage relative to purely face-to-face instruction than did purely online instruction. So to kind of say that in English and what I understand from this large meta-analysis that was done, is that when you blend things together, when you blend together, you know, the human element of the teacher, the online element of technology, and some of the traditional things from education, overall it's better for student learning. So anyone who's kind of fluent with kind of research and wants to read a meta-analysis or listen to kind of a stimulating podcast on that issue, I just wanted to bring that in, bring in some evidence-based practices as research in this field grows, because a theme in the research is definitely that there's not really enough research on how to do the blend right and what really matters for student learning. So thanks for letting me get my little research plug in there.
Thanks for doing that. And then if for anybody who doesn't want to read the meta-analysis and just wants a quick infographic, there is a blended learning infographic available there, distilling a lot of little information about blended learning and definition-wise. And then at the very bottom is a link to our What is a Hybrid Course, a little animation we put together a couple of years ago that if you are doing hybrid courses, you may want to share with your students. It's available on our website. So I'll just reiterate for everybody in attendance to please do sign up for next month's webcast if you haven't done so already, if you're available. And the time of day and day of the week, I think, are different than this one was. We're trying to mix it up so more people can come. But tell your friends and visit that Google Moderator site. And once we get our blog together, we'll share that with everybody. We'll be sending out an email after this podcast is up and available online. I don't know for anybody who wants to revisit all of the pearls of wisdom we shared today, that Jed shared today. This is why I do the podcast, I think, just so I am surrounded by smart people to make myself feel better about myself and smarter.
That's actually why I came today.
Okay,
for the same thing.
Good, perfect. And we're all in agreement. And thanks, everybody, for coming, and have a great rest of the day.
Yep, thanks, everyone. Take care.
Liquificador.